Welcome to DC On Screen, a podcast about the DC Universe properties being produced for film and television, from next year's Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, to television fare like The Flash, Arrow, and Gotham. To be clear, this is a spoiler-filled show. If you want to remain unspoiled, don't be listening to this, y'all. All right, kids, we're going to have a fun little retrospective on the first season of Gotham tonight. I'm David C. Robertson. This is my co-host, Jason.
Hello.
All right, so some news came down the pike earlier this week that Arrow had really big plans for Harley Quinn, but word came down from WB that because Harley Quinn was going to be in Suicide Squad, that they couldn't use her. The other big character that they said that they couldn't use was Deadshot, which is why they've killed him off in Arrow.
Right.
There was one more name in there, though. Originally, the EPs wanted to use Ted Kord, Blue Beetle, instead of Ray Palmer. And WB told them, no, you can't use Blue Beetle, but you can use the Atom, because we're not going to touch him. How do you like that?
I really loved it. We were just daydreaming somewhere last week and kind of had the same idea. Like, how cool would it be if you came back in season 4 and it was Ted Kord?
Mm-hmm.
He does. He fits the format of that show extremely well. I mean, he's just a guy that has some money and passion for justice. Well, good for him. Plus, that was one of the cool aspects of the whole thing was, I don't know that I've ever seen a live Blue Beetle. If it's out there,
I haven't. Now, if
it's out there, I don't know about it.
So if they're planning on doing like a Booster Gold Blue Beetle situation, I'm head over heels. But just don't darken that shit up. I mean, those guys are straight camp.
They really
That's
are.
All I have to say. About
I mean, those guys on Brave and the Bold, for instance, just nailed it. Yeah, and they would be. Just if you ask me right now, what could you pitch that's like The Flash? I would tell you, do Booster Gold and Blue Beetle. It'll make no damn sense whatsoever. It's going to take some adjustment, but people will love you for it. And the thing is, I'm confused though. Why would Geoff Johns, and I assume he's at least one of the people that was aware that property was being used,
right?
What pocket is that in? Where are you hiding the Blue Beetle card?
I don't know. Apparently, there are a lot of little projects going on over at Warner Brothers that we're not privy to and they're not talking about.
And after they hear this podcast, we absolutely will not be privy to.
Right. Tyler James Williams, one of the stars of The Walking Dead and Everybody Hates Chris, confirmed that Jaden Smith is going to be playing Static Shock. He didn't say if it was a TV show. He didn't say if it was a movie. He said it very nonchalantly as if it was common knowledge.
Right. Because anyone doing a live adaptation of Static Shock, that shouldn't be swept under any rug ever.
It really shouldn't.
I don't know
what to do with that.
That makes about as much sense as when you're like, oh yeah, by the way, there's a Harley Quinn over here. Anyway, moving on.
Right.
What do you do with that? And they have the deleted scene available somewhere, and I watched that, and sure enough, it's exactly what you hope it is. It's Deadshot telling Diggle, because he's just scrambling for keys and breaking out as many people as he can, and sure enough, Deadshot stops him before he goes to that door and says, whoa, whoa, not her. Just trust me. Even Deadshot has no use for that kind of crazy.
I would have loved to have seen where they were going to go with it, though. I really would.
What would you do with watching Diggle and Harley Quinn on screen together? It would be a sight. It really would. Because as much as he plays a very straight-laced guy, to have her just bouncing around the screen, it would. It would look like the ringmaster standing there next to one of the, meth head clowns.
Yeah, she calls Diggle chocolate pudding.
I know. That was good.
So Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, as he's known,
always
is very confident, seemingly. Very confident, seemingly, that Black Adam will be released earlier than 2019.
I think that just goes with the natural confidence, if you are Dwayne Johnson, that everyone wants to see you as soon as possible. I think that's just part of daily life if you're The Rock. You just assume that everyone out there is just bated breath for your next appearance.
I mean, you would kind of have to have that sort of mentality to keep up that persona.
You would. And the thing is, I would like to call him out on it. But I completely agree. I cannot wait to see him do Black Adam. He's going to nail it. He is going to nail it like nothing's ever been nailed before, sir.
I hope you're right. hopping over to Arrow News.
Or back to Arrow News?
Yeah, back to Arrow News. Ryla Fukushima says that he may be back as Maseo, despite being killed in the last episode or whatever it was, penultimate episode. Apparently, showrunner Mark Guggenheim told him, don't make any plans. I guess we should plan to see that cat. I told you, they're going to overuse that Lazarus bit.
He doesn't have a... And he doesn't have an equivalent that I'm aware of. So if they're going to do it and, you know, have some fun with it. But I like death to mean something. It has to. And he died, you know, as Lonesome Dove once put it, he died good. That was a perfectly good death scene. Let it be.
Now, I'm sure that anyone who's listening to us has probably been keeping up with the Suicide Squad news. They have been leaking photos and videos galore, mostly of the Batmobile chasing, the Joker-mobile. This thing looks... I mean, the Batmobile looks pretty amazing. The Joker-mobile, I'm not so hot on. I kind of don't know what to do with it. They have they showed the little rims for the Joker and for the Batmobile. And the Batmobile has a little Batman symbol in it. And the Joker-mobile has a little clown head in it. And it kind of feels a little Brave and the Boldish. I'm not sure I dig that. What do you think?
If you're going to get a little Brave and the Boldy, Suicide Squad might be the time to do it.
Yeah.
It does kind of, it sets a precedent, though, for the series of movies you're making. So if you take yourself less seriously at one point, well, I'm going to care about that later. But then again, we're talking about in the same year, you know, when they're released, it's going to be, what, 6 or 7 months before that we see Mommy and Daddy fight? So we're just talking about, you know, Batfleck and Super Cavill having it out.
Mm-hmm.
I could use a little lightening up at that point. I'm not gonna fight it. If you want to get a little Brave and the Boldy and just have a little bit of camp, okay.
Now what looks totally badass is this footage they have of Batman riding on top of the Joker mobile.
I haven't even seen that. That sounds pretty terrific.
He doesn't have the cape, which means it's gonna be added in post, I imagine.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it. Yeah, that'll be good. That'll be best. It's hard not to get excited about that movie. Just it's hard not to.
Adding in post is probably, I imagine, the best way to get the proper cape billow.
Right. The only way, no seamstress has ever broken the laws of physics enough to please, like, a Jim Lee drawing, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
You have to bring digits in if you're going to do that.
And, you know, breaking the laws of physics in, and really capturing that sort of Jim Lee style was what I was hoping for when they started talking about people like Zack Snyder and David Ayer being included in this list of directors, because Watchmen was fantastic.
Cannot say enough about that movie.
All right, over to Gotham Season 2 news. For Season 2, David Mazzau is saying that you will see when Batman is Batman. He is Bruce Wayne. He is the more public persona, playboy and party boy, but then he is also Batman who is fighting crime and a detective kind of guy. In Season 2, you will really start to see that dual personality, his public persona and his detective persona, and I'm very excited to explore that. And I have to say, I am too. What do you think, Jason?
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. And it contradicts, you know, what was it, a year and a half, 2 years ago almost? We started hearing rumors that there was a show in development called Gotham, and one of the things was you wouldn't see Batman at any point. It was that, it's an unexplored period. No one's hit that too much. It's kind of, it was ripe. It was absolutely ripe. And now here we are, and we're talking about seeing Batman. I would think I would resent that more because I was told a different thing, but I don't know. It's like being told that you're going to be given a new puppy and being given two puppies. That's fine. That's fine. I resent nothing, sir. And this kid is killing it. So something we've talked about, I hope they do, you know, either flashbacks or flash forwards. Either way, I hope this kid is heavily involved because he's doing a great job. And several of the other actors that are actors and actresses that are, you know, playing the young roles, the girl doing Selena, for instance, is also kind of killing it. Yeah, I would really like to see those kids grow up into the people they're going to be. Same time, if you wanted to flash forward or however you use the framing device, if you wanted to pull it back or whatever, I mean, I wouldn't mind you fleshing out the story with a little bit of a hint at what's coming. And especially because they've designed parts of this universe where some of the timing does seem to be a little bit off. I mean, their Gordon, it will appear, will be a little old for what he's going to be doing while the Batman mythos is taking place. Bullock in particular is going to be pretty old. I mean, if they flashed forward right now to a 30-year-old Batman right in the prime of what he can do, we're talking about a completely silver-haired Donald Logue trying to get out of a chair and help Batman, trying really hard to get out of that chair. Like, they're going to have him on office duty by this point. By most actual policeman pension plans, he would have been well qualified.
Right.
Because when they introduced him in the show, he's already getting to that point where he's kind of a little bit silver, and he's been there a little while, and that was part of his character, which was a neat tweak. This is one of the most interesting things that people have done with the Bullock character so far, by a very long shot. Speaking of season two, there is some rattlings of news that it's all about new characters here. It's come out that the people you should expect early in the season are the Joker in particular, where Bruno Heller, the showrunner, he actually described it as, the first part of season two, we're going to see the rise of the Joker, or how he became the Joker. Now, he's been extremely timid about exactly who that Jerome kid is, and we'll get into that in just a second. But the rise of the Joker is going to be a big deal. He's also mentioned that Mr. Freeze is going to be in there, and that's a big deal. It gets into a rogues gallery very quickly, because at this point we have the rise of the Riddler. He wants to explore what the Penguin does with all his power. He wants to explore how the Joker came to be. He's just going to straight up introduce Mr. Freeze. And then we're going to get... He's only teased some of the monsters of the week that'll be there. And it's kind of phrased as, also villains like Clayface and Mad Hatter. Okay. Throwing me bones like Clayface and Mad Hatter, that is a very welcomed bone to throw. Mad Hatter in particular is an extremely interesting character, because he's got a lot that you can do with his background. You've got there's a lot of development that can get somebody to the point where they feel like they are the Mad Hatter. At the same time, Clayface, especially if they do the version they did in BTAS, I think, where he's the actor who kind of gets himself in a bad situation. He ends up with this material. Great. But having something like Clayface, having something like Mad Hatter in this entire situation, yes, absolutely. And if this is the show that gives you finally a live-action version of Mr. Freeze that isn't laugh-out-loud unbelievable, kudos, sir. Kudos.
Well, I'll say this, and this is as good as time as any to start our Gotham Season 1 retrospective.
Sure.
The promise of so many new characters seems daunting to me, purely because it seems that they still don't know what makes the show work and what doesn't make the show work. Gotham Season 1, to me, seems like two very separate seasons. It seems like Season 1, or two different shows. Like the first half of Season 1 seems like a dark, gritty prequel.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second half of Season 1 seems like a freaking cartoon. It's
times,
overcrowded. Yep. Yeah, it's overcrowded with characters that they tried to shoehorn into every episode. My God, man. At what point do we just cut out the ham fest? I mean, thank God. It looks like Fish Mooney's not going to be around anymore.
Okay. The
there's so much to talk about.
I cannot argue with the Fish Mooney thing. I can't touch that. I completely agree.
She chewed so much scenery, I thought her false teeth would fall out.
Yeah. She was... Towards the end, you kept expecting there to be chipped teeth. I agree. It just...
Like, Uma Thurman from Batman and Robin was just reeking off of this woman.
Right.
On a consistent basis.
Right. And it was... Which was a little bit disappointing, because we know she's good, and it wasn't like she was being... It wasn't like she was doing a bad job with what she was trying to do. Woman's a great actress. She did what she planned on doing. I found myself having to try to care on a few occasions. It wasn't right. until
the problem
late.
Is the writers didn't do what they planned on doing.
Well, they didn't. Now, the entire purpose of her being there, though, was that the Gotham mythos is so well known that you had to inject some element of chaos, which mm-hmm. for season two, you've got all kinds of elements of chaos, I guess, but they're all known elements. But anyway, there had to be someone on screen at some point. You can't threaten death. I mean, you're not going to kill off the Riddler. You're not going to kill off the Penguin. None of these people are going to die.
Yeah, but you would say that about, you would say that about Boss Maroney, but, I mean, his ass is 6 feet under. So.
Well, there he goes. I was a little sad to see him go because I like that guy. I do like that guy, but that character, had hit the end of his arc, man. That was done. That ship had sunk. It was time.
I would say that about a couple of those characters.
I absolutely would. It gave it a little more credence when Falcone later went, you know what? Nope, 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 and nope. I'm out. I'm going to go to Florida.
Yeah, which was a huge problem for me as like two months prior, we watch him strangle a woman he cared deeply for.
Right.
To cement his position. To cement his position in the underworld.
At the very least, it cemented how I felt about that character, because he was very clearly a badass. This was an old man who enjoyed picking flowers, and he seemed genteel a couple times, and you knew he had an edge.
He did.
You knew there was a reason he was where he was, but until that scene, you hadn't gotten the breadth of just how gangster he really was. But man,
and I'll give it to them that he was talking about moving down to Florida with, what was her name, Lila?
Yeah,
is that it?
Yeah. Now they had sown some seeds about how he was kind
retiring,
of a little bit done with the game.
But then her coming out as or being outed as a spy for Fish Mooney seemed to reverse that. Like, oh hell no,
right.
And it was a badass scene, and
which
just
works,
cold-blooded.
Like, that's part of the psychology of that kind of character is even when they're ready to tap out, they want to do it on their own terms. They will not be told when to tap out. I get behind that. I really can. That's the kind of bravado that got you where you got. That's you have to have it.
But you have a character who strangles a young woman to death to cement his position in the underworld.
Right.
And then looks around and there's Fish Mooney with bedazzled shit on her side of her head. Mm-hmm. And suddenly he's like, nope, this is too much. I'm retiring.
Right. Which,
what?
He, yeah. At that point, he was speaking for the believability of costume design in the show. Nope, too much.
You know what,
that woman bedazzled the side of her skull. I'm out. I am damn out.
No, I thought I was going to be at a show about Batman.
This was supposed to be a classic show. It was going to be basically GCPD,
skull.
We got this. No, I can kind of get behind
All
him.
All right, so...
The reason I can get behind him going, though, is that, just to end cap it, I hate to say it, but the organized crime aspect of Batman... In all of the mm-hmm. stories is like my least favorite part. I want the Rogues Gallery.
When it's done well, it's my favorite part.
When I'm looking at you, Long Halloween, it is. It's great, but it doesn't often get done well.
When I'm talking done well, I mean Long Halloween. I mean Dark Victory. I mean Batman the Animated Series. Rupert Thorne.
Right.
Arnold Stromwell.
Yeah, we're not talking about
year one,
right? Even year one was but it seems to only get done well on occasion. For the most part,
yeah. I mean,
there
I
are
don't
a lot
need
of great gangland stories.
Supervillains.
This doesn't need to be one of them,
right?
I mean,
all right. So the entire Dollmaker story just needed to go away. Fish Mooney, like once her story stopped being about dethroning Falcone.
Mm-hmm.
And became some weird side adventure, which is exactly what I'm talking about. Starts in the second half of season one.
I agree.
After the break,
it raised the stakes for better or worse.
Her ass should have been tortured
stakes,
and killed
though.
And done.
Oh, no, I agree. But that was about the time I started actually caring about her, in all fairness. She was one of those things that just, it dragged through, and I was just, she was the kind of character that I hadn't learned to care about yet. And then somewhere around...
You know what? I had.
When?
At exactly the point as earlier on, when she's in the nightclub and her and the old woman is there that is her mother, basically.
Mm-hmm.
They have this whole thing where she's talked about like how she's risen up from being poor and all that. There was a kernel of truth in the character there, and then they didn't pick up that thread. They just kind of, I don't know what you would call it, just jacked themselves off into oblivion. I don't know. Just
I feel like that
gets captured by the doll maker, becomes like the leader of an underground subterranean domain, fights her way, scoops out her freaking eyeball. Oh my god, just so weird.
Well, what happened with her though, and there were a couple scenes before where I care, like when her little love toy gets beat up, and you know, she has to sit there and listen to it, and then she tells the restaurant to get out. That would have been a good scene anyway, but god, the way Jada Pinkett does it, just, you know, it kind of killed. I mean, there are good moments. It just overall, I didn't care. So it was a show called Gotham, and this was a new character, and I couldn't tell why I needed to care yet. It wasn't until she was actually trapped in the dungeon and having to kind of build her crew from nothing. I didn't care when she was the decadent, overdressed, and I cannot stress how I am not a stylist enough before I say this, but overdressed. She was the same scenery she was chewing up. She was a part of it. She was decadent, which I'm sure looked great. If you're a set designer and costume designer, you were all happy with yourselves. But man, between that, it was extremely over the top. It was saccharine. It was weird. But when she had to start from nothing and start recruiting people with nothing but swagger, that's when I cared.
And that's fine, but I think it could have been done in an easier way without her getting kidnapped. And by the way, she got shot in the gut and then just shows up in Gotham with no explanation.
Thanks,
showrunners.
So strange. She was shot in the gut with a sniper rifle. I know exactly shit about guns. I know that's supposed to hurt and that you probably die. That is not acceptable. You cannot stroll on shore 2 weeks later. Now, it did say 2 weeks later. That is not enough time to stroll on shore. That is not enough time for the bedazzling on the side of your skull to have stopped clotting. It takes time.
Yeah. I would like to have, if I had to follow such an egregious storyline for so long, at least let me know, you know, give me a line, give me something. Let me know how she got back to Gotham with, you know, without a swollen, bloated, pussy belly.
Right.
Oh, my God.
And the thing is, there are... And look, if the argument is, hey, we could have given you all that, but we'd have had to cut all this. Okay, all right, I get that. Thing is, you shot her in the stomach. You could have shot her in the top of the arm. Wouldn't have made a difference.
The whole captured
she can walk
by
on that shore 2 weeks later with a bruise on her arm, and I'm going to buy it. But in the middle of the gut? Come on now.
The entire... captured by Dollmaker story seemed like they were desperately trying to figure out, oh wait, we had that Dollmaker reference earlier and we had a couple episodes there, what the hell are we going to do with that? And they decided, oh well, we don't know what the hell to do with fish, so let's just merge those two. Second half of the season, they didn't know what to do with anybody. Penguin gets the club. They build it up like he can't keep the money coming in, no one's coming to the club, and then all of a sudden he's good, like the club is doing well, he figured it out with Butch's assistance. Strange tap dancing brainwashed Butch.
That was one of the, that was again, one of the moments where you just kind of
teetering into Cartoonsville.
You buried the bridge of your nose in your fingers and thought, okay, all right, I love you, so I'm gonna bear with you. But Aaron Zaz does not have freaking hypnosis abilities, and that's going too far.
this show went into cartoon camp fest.
The closest he has ever been to making a man dance is a flailing body as he throws its slashed corpse over the side of a bridge. That man is not a mind control expert by any stretch. He does not have control over his own mind. That is very clear.
See, I've always been more partial to the Victor Zsasz that was just kind of a psycho. We didn't really need him to be in the mob. He just kind of ran around killing folks and slashing marks into his own skin.
Right, right.
I was good with that.
That's whatever. That's one of the coolest stories you can have. Now, he's a monster of the week. Can't stress that enough. Monster of the week. I don't know how to make a story. He's a guy who slashes people because he wants to show them peace. And that's a cool psychopath story. But unless you're going to develop the entire thing, don't just show that to me. Now, to be fair, completely fair to the series, his name is Victor, not Aaron, by the way. His name is Victor Zsasz, and they've never promised me the rest of that. No, I said Aaron, and I apologize. That's his name, but they've never shown us scars on the side of his body. He's just always been a strange guy with that name. So we may be kind of expecting too much out of the character. And I'm just a viewer, and these things happen. And maybe I read
Well, for a show that seems to be going for such, blood and gore, I would think that they would just, why would you make Zsasz it's a clever wink, much like most of the show, to the fans, but we don't need to see Zsasz every week or every other week or whatever the hell it wound up being.
The thing I hate about that, though, is aside from that little, butch dancing kind of scene, he's been a lot of fun. I like how he plays the character. I really do. I think he could be the kind of guy that I could buy being, if he pulled off that nice suit and there were scars under it, I would buy it. I like that guy's face. Yeah. I like how he's playing it.
Of course.
So I kind of like the idea that they're saving him. I hope this is what's happening, that they're kind of saving it. They've buried the name. They've tried to kind of bury the lead on that one. And, maybe into season two. Of course, season two seems a little packed. But maybe season three.
No kidding.
You kind of pull him out as a... I wouldn't mind him as a story arc. I really wouldn't. That even he works for... that's actually a good question. I haven't thought about it. Who the hell does he work for at this point?
I mean, I guess it would be Gordon.
I guess.
Or maybe he would just leave and go with Falcone.
I mean, his employer retired. I don't see Zsasz as the kind of guy who just wants to go chill on a beach. At the very least, he's pale as hell, and he'll fry immediately. I don't know who he works for. He's a loose end. He actually is. He's a loose end on this episode.
Now, let's talk about Barbara.
Or we could not talk about Barbara. Because thinking about Barbara makes me very happy.
She's such an integral part and a necessary part of the season.
Her name is an extremely integral part. Different conversation.
Barbara is a whole mess and a half. It's clear from the onset they don't know what to do with this character. Given the quick rundown, she whined and whined about being included in Jim's life, then couldn't handle it, left him for Montoya.
Well, they had a previous
started
relationship,
doing drugs again.
And that was a turning point of something.
Well, apparently she was with Montoya.
Okay.
They were doing the drugs.
Which is fine. We're talking about Renee Montoya here. We're talking about, and I cannot explain how excited I would be to see the question show up in this series.
Mm-hmm.
Even fitting the mood of the show, the question running around there, feeding Gordon clues, and then showing up to work the next day? Yes! Please, as soon as possible. And Montoya is, established as a lesbian. There's no surprise there. Barbara was kind of a weird twerk, but it would be really interesting if they did something with it, but they just seemed to use it as a weird ploy to make it interesting for a second, which is... weird and false. It seemed like they couldn't find something provocative enough to make Barbara interesting.
No, that's all they were doing. That was my point. She went from wanting to be in Jim's life, couldn't handle it, ran to Montoya, started doing drugs again,
Right.
Got semi-consensually sexually abused by the ogre, killed her parents, and tried to kill Leslie Tompkins. They've taken her from whiny girlfriend to murdering psychopath.
Yes. And right. The closest thing they did to making her interesting was the psychopath angle. But the closest thing they did to making her interesting to me personally was having her head smashed against a floor several times. Because I was rooting at this point for Leslie Tompkins to end that storyline.
And my little rundown doesn't even include the fact that she was apparently a mentor for Poison Ivy and Selena, who she was apparently okay with staying in her apartment. And by the way, that was weird and just laced with sexual innuendo.
It was strange. It was straight up strange.
It seemed predatory.
It did. And it really did. It felt awkward, and I didn't like any part of it.
I didn't either.
There was no part of that that was fun to watch. It was just a thing I kind of cringed. I mean, I remember finding myself, I'm sitting alone in a room watching these episodes, and I found myself kind of cocking my head back and squinting.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't be doing that alone in a room watching an episode.
No.
But I was, if it's my sensibilities that are ill-calibrated and that can be pointed out, I'll accept it. But I don't think that's the case. I think it was just damn strange.
It was. Barbara has been the character in the most tumult, I would say, over the course of this season. I hope like hell she won't be back.
No,
continuity
she will.
Be damned. I don't need.
It is confirmed. Is here for season two, sir. I'm sorry to inform you.
Oh, why can't they let her go?
I don't know.
I don't want her there.
I don't know. That was one of my favorite parts
Maroney,
of the finale. Was I hoped that she had experienced heavy brain damage and would not be returning in anything other than a comatose state.
Is she back as recurring or back as main cast?
A lot of the recurring/main stuff is still to be developed. They're going to start shooting in June. Apparently in the same set of docks they use for Boardwalk Empire, which, good call. It's a good set. So in June we'll know more.
That will bring me to Montoya and Alan, who disappeared completely in the second half of the season.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Those two as rivals or allies for Jim Gordon was a good thing. Montoya's relationship with Barbara aside, which was tedious at best, they were actually, they had some good chemistry with each other, and I liked where they were heading with them coming to respect Gordon, and then they're gone.
Major crimes, even
mentioned again.
The Penguins, before he's even the Penguin, they were at least part of the plot device for him getting in trouble to begin with. This is the thing, you cannot drop the names Crispus Allen and Rene Montoya and not mean something. It's the question, and a man who at some point is the specter, cannot understate this, the right hand of the vengeance of God.
Right.
You have to mean something when you say these things.
No, they made some really interesting cast choices that I was really down with. The cat playing Harvey Dent, Nick DeGosto.
Great
this
job.
Is a cat that this is a cat that I came to like on Masters of Sex, and he did a great job here as Harvey. I really dig the idea that they're kind of going along with the split personality, and he did it justice, man. He rocked it.
Yeah, he and they didn't because you're watching.
I think he was in maybe two episodes.
I'm sorry.
I think he was in maybe two episodes, so they didn't cram Harvey Dent down my throat, but. What we got of him, I really enjoyed.
He was only teased, and he really is. He's a huge part of Batman's life, especially and let's go back to Long Halloween, because if I have to pick one series that has the most to do with Gotham, other than the GCPD series, I know, but if I have to pick one thing that has the most to do with what I've seen in Gotham so far, it's going to be Long Halloween. And, man, I'm happy with if we get to the end of season two and maybe he starts getting himself in the situation or whatever it is, or God help us if they actually do the animated series version of the Judge. That I might require a few alone moments for something like that. It he's going to... The thing is, he's been playing just a really straightforward... He really has. He's been the kind of guy that you look at him and he plays an extremely straightforward district attorney. And then you look at him... There was those couple of moments where you saw Two-Face break through. He freaking nailed mm-hmm. it. He freaking nailed it. There was the gravel in the voice kind of thing. You know, he got it. He absolutely got it.
Now let's talk about Sarah Essen. If we are to believe that she and James Jim Gordon get together at some point, which this show is just balls crazy, so who knows what they're going to do with that.
That is
she seems a little old, but I like her swagger. I like her sternness. Got no real problems with her. They haven't really given her a whole lot to do other than she's honest and secretly backs Jim.
Mm-hmm.
Good with that so far.
And I'll admit, this version of her being honest versus Jim's kind of being out there, I mean, you got to think of year one, right?
Yeah, a little bit. Leslie Tompkins, very cool addition to the second half of season one.
Mm-hmm.
Huge improvement on Barbara. I mean, of course, she's played by Marina Baccarin, who I will always love just for being in Firefly.
Right.
But
that is a woman who has 100% of my approval at all times.
They found a way to write an interesting female on the show.
Right.
I couldn't be prouder of them for it.
Now, the only thing I can say is she's been stated as series regular.
Right.
That doesn't mean anything more than it has been, you know, for the last half of the season as we go. So she's, you know, it's a regular. It's 7 of 9 episodes. I don't know. I mean, pick your term here.
Which I would, you know, based on this season, be completely okay with all the quote-unquote regulars if they were all recurring.
Because
mm-hmm. I don't need to see Bruce and Alfred in every episode. I really don't.
Well, the finale proved that.
I mean, they did that with Barbara.
Right, right.
I'm hoping we might get a little more of a mother role for Bruce. Like,
which is just...
kind of want to see Alfred get some play, you know? I don't want Tompkins to stick with Jim, is what I'm saying. Like, I want her to eventually move on and
well, and he thought if he hops off with Essen for a second, it kind of, I'll be happy for him. But at the same time, the inter-office love affair kind of thing, we've already seen that. That was part of the first part of their storyline. So if they're going to do that again, I'm going to be bored. But if instead, they're going to do, you know, him and Sarah Essen, and there's something to it. Okay, fine. Same time, we're talking about Jim Gordon. In many of the stories, that is a single dad, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
If that guy is single, that's fine. I'm not hating on it.
I agree. Which, you know, he...
I understand.
I don't know.
That Ben McKenzie is an attractive man, and the instinct is to put attractive female next to him. I get it. We don't have to give in to
the way that guy walks, the way Ben McKenzie plays Jim Gordon, the way he walks and talks, it's one of those hang-ups for me on the show. He musters so much damn testosterone in the utterance of every line. You have to imagine he has to have a girlfriend or a fiance or something. He has to have sex, because if he doesn't, he will blow. He will have a mental breakdown. This guy is so on edge.
There's just the assumption that there's something to do with that amount of testosterone.
He's just this walking, floundering cowboy, gritting his teeth constantly.
He is. No, that's the perfect description, though. Cowboy. And he is. He's absolutely friggin' perfect for that. And this is why he's been so interesting on the show, is this is a guy that has so much... well, I mean, swagger. There's no better word. Swagger. That he... oh, the only thing I can imagine that gets him back to the kind of person who is just happy to do his job and contribute... because imagine it as a story arc. You think you're in charge of getting Gotham back.
Mm-hmm.
And then this guy comes out of nowhere called Batman. And at first, you know, you resist the entire concept of a vigilante. And, you know, hey, there are a lot of reasons to do that. And you can explore stuff about him feeling like he's a vigilante himself, so being a little jealous of the concept, and at the same time just plain old justice. Enforcing law on your own is not acceptable. You can go into any of that right. for a second. But at the same time, if he decides at the end of that day that this guy's doing a hell of a lot of good, and the most good mm-hmm. that I can do to contribute to his campaign is to sit quietly, do my job, and make sure I'm there for him. Like, don't get fired. Don't give anyone any reason to get rid of you. You need to be on the inside. This guy's going to need you. And when the time comes, that's the most help you can possibly give. I would be happy to see that kind of storyline. I really would.
No, I do. There are parts of the Jim Gordon character that I enjoy. And then there, you know, part of me actually is ashamed to admit that I would be delighted by just a scene, just a normal office scene between he and Harvey, where he just, through gritted teeth, goes, "Harvey, pass me that pencil." Because that's just how he plays every scene with that character almost.
Oh, that's been.
But he's
been
a badass, and I'm willing to accept it.
It's been one of the most interesting parts, though, is Bullock is this count his pennies, watch the grains of sand pass through the glass. One day, if I survive, I'm good. And then this guy mm-hmm. comes in, and suddenly everything else means something. Suddenly, justice means yeah. a damn. Like, that's been one of my favorite mm-hmm. parts. Watching Donald Logue take this whole thing on has been one of my favorite parts of the show.
Donald Logue has been a fantastic addition to the show, and I've always liked the actor whenever I've been, you know, blessed enough to see him on screen.
Right.
He's not one of these guys that is just, you know, always been there for you.
No, he's not showing up in TMZ. He's just one of those guys that
right.
has been solidly good at everything that anyone's asked him to do, and this is no exception. Yeah. He freaking nailed it. He did.
And I'll say, like, the best part of Fish Mooney's storyline has just been her very subtle relationship with Bullock.
Right. I mean,
even in the finale where she's like, "I'm going to kill you slowly. I'm going to kill you quick.
Yeah.
We're good."
That's how she honors Gordon. "You're a good man. I'll kill you slowly. Or I'll kill you quick." I mean, and then just to Bullock, just this, "We're good." That's all she says. "We're good."
Yeah.
We're cool. Yeah. Sorry. It's flippant almost. It's casual.
It is.
She's that scene. There's nothing casual about it. And yet there they are.
Yeah.
Except, by the way, and this has bothered me the entire time, if I'm wrong about it, please point it out to me. I would love to be wrong about this. But.
Okay.
Those are very simple mechanisms that are holding those people. They have chains between their mm-hmm. wrists. The chains are mm-hmm. interlocked into another set of chains that goes up, and that the actual clasp at the end is just a very simple locking mechanism. Unless there's something mm-hmm. I'm missing, that's a very simple locking mechanism. What am I missing?
I mean,
I would like to know why these people with a combined IQ of somewhere over the 410 can't figure out a way out of a couple of locks.
I would assume.
Actually, no. There were. That's a combined IQ of over 500. If you had to bet based on character development, those are smart people.
I would assume that one.
The best
Selena
he can
Kyle
do is like
one who,
smile goofy. It's just some weird goofy smile. He passes at Selena like, "Hey, help a brother out." No, that's it. That's all he's got. That's what's in his tank. Some 14-year-old girl he once talked to.
My thought was that Selena was the one who chained them up, which means that those locks are not quite as simple as one might surmise.
Love your version.
This is all headcanon, but two, they were chained up in front of essentially a bedazzled firing squad. So, I mean, if you're willing to go that route and bedazzle your own head, let's just go ahead and guess you're willing to pull that
You've
trigger.
You've clearly got some issues that should not be dealt with right now. If I'm mugged on the street by the average man, I might think to fight back. If I'm mugged on the street by the average man who has bedazzled his own skull, I'm going to sit quietly and hope I survive.
Now, the season suffers from some story elements, some writing elements. I mean, mm-hmm. the dialogue isn't always quite up to snuff.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean,
it's a weekly series about, you know, pre-Batman Batman.
Right.
So I'm going to let that slide a little bit. The Penguin's mother. There's no real version of this where her being in the show for more than one or two episodes, there's no version of that where that's okay. She's an intensely annoying character. I wish Maroney had killed her.
No, I can do this in six words. You ready? Love that actress. Hate that character.
Yeah.
This is a woman who once kicked Bill Murray in the balls.
Sure.
And I laughed. I laughed with all of my little child heart. I don't care now. That's just a weird role. And one of the ways they introduced her was a strange bathtub scene. And it just became one of those things where there were a couple times where they kind of put in sexual innuendo in the show.
Mm-hmm.
But Gotham doesn't have to do that. Gotham has a ton of things going on that have nothing to do with those kinds of character flaws.
And despite the fact that they keep giving us these weird incestuous innuendos with mm-hmm. Penguin and his mother, and strange sexual air with Barbara and the kids in her penthouse.
All right.
They very, very ardently shy away from any kind of real sex on the show. I mean, for God's sakes, Barbara's taken to a BDSM dungeon.
The BDSM community would firmly insist that they don't do anything near that unsafe. That's just what they would call, and I'm going to quote here from someone that I've never met that might be involved with that community. I have no freaking idea. But they're going to call that, and I'm going to quote, some weird shit that ain't right.
Uh-huh. Well, like, you know, I felt like they were trying to play upon the... You know, but when they went to production, they had to have believed that 50 Shades of Grey was going to be much bigger than it was. And it was going to have a whole lot more
bull
than it did.
Maybe the best hope. No. And, see, I really don't think that, though, because there's no way they would, like, 50 Shades kind of capitalized on a little bit of the, it's an entire aspect of that community that I'm sure has everything to complain about here, but. It focused on a little bit of the fetishism of it, and this is just plain
mm-hmm.
this is just brainwashing in a very specific sexual manner that's obviously wrong. And to be fair to that choice and in the story of the season one, Barbara walking into that little dungeon and actually looking interested instead of scared was maybe the most interesting mm-hmm. thing she had done so far.
And then they retconned that look in the next episode.
And then it was gone. Yeah. I mean, she was always kind of a little on board, but they never mm-hmm. let her... I would have been happier with everything. If they had made, you know, the ogre... By the way, Ventimiglia, I was happy to see him again. I enjoy that guy. But if they had made the ogre kind of an introduction to her dark side, he recruits mm-hmm. her. Charlie Manson's her ass. And they make mm-hmm. her kind of an absolute... cannot remember the name of that little lady. Oh, well. She was at the trial and everything, but if they made her that little sidekick and that was the entire point of that was to introduce her to this dark side. That was what I was hoping. Right. The moment I saw that weird dark look in her eyes, that was what I was hoping would happen was that they would introduce her as this is her dark side. Mm-hmm. And at this point, it's a girl with the name Barbara Gordon. There are ways to get around that. There are interesting ways to get around that too. You can still have the Oracle in Batgirl. You still can do this. You can even have some crazy villain who came before her who bore the name. But you cannot have mm-hmm. some chick that's as uninteresting as the character they've presented that somehow turns into something I care about later. Right now, they've got a lot to prove to me. I don't know if it's her or the writing or where the story's going or what, but they have a lot to prove as far as that character goes.
Let's jump over to Edward Nygma.
We disagreed entirely on that last scene, didn't we?
I don't know. I don't remember the conversation. We have a guy who has a crush. He likes riddles, and he has a crush on a lady at the office. That's what we're presented in the beginning of season one and through most of season two.
All fair. Seems just like a quirky
season
dude.
Season two, sorry.
Just a quirky dude.
I keep thinking of it as season one and season two. That's what I keep thinking of it as.
Right, right.
First half of the season and most of the second half of the season, you've got the singular season. We've got a guy who
one day
who's
you will
quirky,
accept the singularity
riddles.
Of that season. One day.
One day. Yeah. Never. Okay, he kind of dips his toe into the dark side, screwing over the jackass who won't let him into the lab. Cool, whatever. That's cool. But that final episode, that final scene where he goes batshit crazy over the fact that she figured out his little riddle that her Bo's fake note spelled out Nygma. And they, for the first time, they just show him actually just go balls of the wall insane. It felt unearned. It felt weird. It was a cool little sequence, but I could have dealt with that earlier in the season. I could have dealt with that, you know, as a cliffhanger for the mid-season finale.
Okay, I could get behind that, but then okay, if they had done that mid-season, that's one thing. And whatever they would have done with the, you know, the end of season one, you know, you can only speculate. But I'd be happy to try to defend what happened with that sequence, though. Because it wasn't unearned. To me, that was completely earned. He has a thing for a girl. And it doesn't matter where you are in your life. The overwhelming odds are, at some point in your life, you've felt a way about a girl. I want to guess junior high for the average male. But you felt a way about a girl. You've been infatuated. And you felt like that girl wasn't getting the treatment you felt she deserved. Well, fine. This is an extreme version of that. But for him, what it amounted to was he did. He had an unnatural affectation for this girl. Who, by the way, is adorable. So, and I actually don't blame him there, but it was he has an obsessive personality in general. So, I can buy that he doesn't just a guy like Edward Nygma doesn't just like a girl. He falls for a girl, and he falls head over heels. And not only are his emotions telling him that he loves this woman without bounds. He's the kind of guy whose logic is so persistent that it would follow him there. And he would feel so deeply about this girl and be able to justify it to such an extent that it wouldn't faze him later when he saw the girl being abused and thought that he should step in. And don't get me wrong. You see a girl, there are signs of abuse in this show. There are signs of actual domestic violence in this show. That
sure
he would have been well within his right to go talk to another department within his, you know, workplace and explain what was happening and have it be, you know, maybe an internal affairs thing or something. But of course, we're talking about a crazy motherfucker anyway. So this is a crazy bastard. He goes in and just takes care of the problem himself. I can get behind all that. Like, that doesn't feel weird to me. Crazy dude, crazy infatuation. He believes everything he says because dude's got an IQ of like 180. I mean, this is a smart guy. By all accounts, he's one of the kind of, you pick a top 10 out of the DC universe, he's going to be at like the bottom 10, but the guys above him are, you know, world enders. So, and Batman. So I'm not hating on his intelligence here. That's going to follow him into it. And suddenly he feels like he should defend this girl. So he kills the guy that he feels like is hurting the girl. Well,
right.
His other OCD pattern is he loves riddles, And in the midst of all that nervous energy, he just cannot resist putting one in. And that's the mm-hmm. version I like for what has happened to this character. Because the crazy version of him that was so OCD that he felt the need to take a handle on the situation in that manner, that same guy whose logic just followed him the entire way would be the same kind of guy who wouldn't be able to keep out the other portions of his brain that were just obsessive. And him putting the little enigma down the side. Now, I was proud of her that she caught it. That was pretty cool. But, I don't know, him picking up on it and going absolutely crazy over it, I was fine with.
I think my real problem is not that it was there. My real problem is that we should have seen more signs of it throughout the series as a whole. We had way too many scenes of him just kind of popping in to see her and her rebuffing him and him moving on with his day.
Okay, now
we could have gotten a little more of the psychosis a little earlier.
Could have been turned into crazy scenes, and yeah, that would have made sense.
Yeah, I just think it was uneven. He just kind of came off as a shy, weird, quirky little dude who liked riddles, and apparently this girl. And they tried to cram way too much character development into the last half of that season. That's just, we got too much of the same scene over and over again.
Okay.
I like the guy playing him, and I'm interested to see where they're going with him.
Yeah, the guy playing him, Corey Michael Smith. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good man. He's doing a great job. Okay, I can get behind the whole, like, we saw too many of those scenes. Same time, you kind of just killed a guy. And your job is forensics. You know how easy it is to kill a guy and that go badly. So, I mean, I cannot imagine the amount of crazy that goes through your head when you've just killed a man. I can buy that you just absolutely hit the batshit level pretty quickly.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying. I mean, Nigma's transformation was probably one of the least egregious of the egregious there for me.
He might end up being one of those, especially depending on how they play him. Because the Riddler's been a few people. He's been an extremely timid guy who just, you know, sometimes he looks like a timid office intern who likes crossword puzzles. Sometimes I swear that's how they play him. And then other times he is an extremely intimidating, intelligent, bizarre man who has every intention of screwing with your life and teasing you with ideas of how you could have fixed it, but you can't because you're not that smart. And those are the versions that are creepy as hell. Those are the versions that are interesting. And they've set it up. I think they can go for that version, and I'll buy it.
All right, let's move on and go to Bruce Wayne and Alfred. I could deal with it if they moved on from the Bruce hangs out with Selina aspects.
Sure.
They had exactly one episode, I think, in season one where I actually enjoyed it, where Alfred kind of comes in and sees that Bruce is actually just being a kid for a minute.
Right.
But I feel like that tie should be broken. If we're going to do Selina, let's see her do other things. Let's not go back to Bruce.
Let him develop independently.
Sean Pertwee, the cat playing Alfred.
I can't stress this enough. When he was stabbed in the last few episodes, I was serious when I said this. If they had let him die, I would have stopped watching the show. I just would have.
I would have been pissed.
I would have banned it.
The only thing I really hate about his character right now is that he continues to call Bruce Master B. I don't know why, but it completely takes it out of takes me out of it. I can't deal with it. David Mazzal, the kid playing Bruce Wayne, though.
I gotta say though, I'm gonna have to go back and watch a few episodes. I've never even noticed Master B. I didn't know he was trying to give him like a hip hop name.
He does. It reminds me of Bud Bundy from Married with Children when he decided to call himself Rap Master B.
Oh God, I didn't even catch it. I've apparently some part of my brain just overrode it as, oh, he means Master Bruce, and I moved on with my day. I've never even caught it.
Yeah, yeah. Just go back and check that out. Master
no,
Damon.
I will not. All I'm right. entirely happy with my memory. I have no intention of replacing that with another memory.
But there, this kid, this kid playing Bruce Wayne, he really is pretty fantastic.
No, killing it. Killing.
There are, like, there was a time, there was an episode early on where he's, I believe he's talking to Jim Gordon, and Alfred comes in and just disapproves of the entire thing, like, oh, he's a small child, he shouldn't have to deal with it. And he goes to, you know.
Which is fair.
Stop whatever's happening. And Bruce just turns to him and goes from like a little kid talking to a police officer about the death of his parents, completely vulnerable, and snaps from that to turning to Alfred and just going, Alfred. Like, I swear Conroy's voice came out of that kid. I swear.
Yes.
And Alfred like takes a step back and goes, very, very well.
Very no, well, he Master always Bruce. that is a disciplined man. Like when the time comes, he has exactly the stance you'd expect from an ex-military man or ex-Royal Air Force or what I don't know. But yeah, that he will snap back into character, gentleman's gentleman, and he's gone. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to feel for him. He as a character, he's tasked with raising this child, but at the same time, he's raising, you know, his boss. So he can only take certain things so far. But every now and then, he just, yeah, Bruce will look at him. Bruce is happy to take instruction from this man. You can tell he loves him. There's a paternal affection. But every now and then, he will snap to him like he has that I'm your boss tone. That kid is killing it for that. He really is. Oh, yeah. Man. One of my favorites, really though. My favorite scene out of that kid so far. He asks to go to the board of directors. He sits down with his board of directors, who are just kind of, you're surprised they fill out the table because they're almost sure this is just sort of, they think this is going to be funny. And they sit down, and he immediately explains to them that, you know, he's going to investigate them and that there may be criminal action. And he thinks several of the people involved are at this table. And you can just see the faces change on that table.
Yeah.
That kid clearly has the biggest sack at that table. No questions asked. That is freaking Batman sitting at the end of that table, and they just don't know it yet.
And the fact that a child can pull off that kind of scene, that ridiculous, completely retarded scene.
Yeah. No, the gravitas that kid's pulling. Now, I know as an audience member, I'm sitting there watching it going, well, this kid's going to be Batman someday. But I'm buying it. I'm buying it. This kid looks down somebody's, well, he looks into your eyes and it looks like he's looking through the rest of your body. It looks like an exploratory exam just because he's darting his eyes at you.
That kid, on more than one occasion, has been the sole thing stretching my suspension of disbelief on this show.
Right, right. You're willing to carry it as far as that kid's involved, at least. He's nailed it. He's absolutely kind of on top of nailing it with that character. He's been interesting. He's been playful when he needed to be. Especially when Alfred's friend from the service came by, that scene, he just keeps getting up. That's the guy I want to see someday. He just keeps getting up. He keeps getting his ass kicked. He keeps getting taken down. And one of my favorite little lines is, you know, he's, but you're bigger than me. And he gives him the like, well, then, you know, find a weak point kind of thing. And immediately when he has that little back and forth, I'm thinking about Bane and, you know, Killer Croc, Grundy, like characters like that, where you just, it's the Batman we all love that's just way overmatched. And he just finds the weak point. He just, there's no fear. There's no human instinct to him that says stop. And that, come on, that's the guy we love. You can see little hints
now,
just little hints in that kid's eyes sometimes that's going to be the guy that's going to be the guy I love one day.
Now, overall, I'm looking at, I really do, I want to give this show like a 5 out of 10. Overall, it was like you were saying earlier, it's good, it's not great. They really don't know where they're going. It's pretty clear, it's pretty obvious. They have some great players. Robin Lord Taylor as the Penguin, killing it. Yeah, David Masao as Bruce Wayne.
We haven't talked about him at all, but just 10 out of 10, man. Like,
yeah, I mean,
absolutely 10 out of 10. That guy has redefined how I think about the Penguin.
He has. I did mention it briefly, but first half of that season, like his climb to power, it was fun. It was fun watching him play both sides of the Maroni and Falcone.
Oh yeah,
war.
That one scene in particular where he's walking up on the grass, kind of next to Falcone's. It looks like a garden. He's got a coop out there, and he walks over the grass and. I mean, if this was The Sopranos, for instance, that's a death scene. Or it's going to cut the journey and ruin the last 6 years of my life. Either way. But at the very least, that is a scene that it plays as ominous. And so help me God. He played it. I bought it when he was doing it. It was, he's been there. He's been on point. I know that this kid has that emo hair. And I know he's got that snivelly voice. I know there are all these problems with the guy. I know there are all these reasons that you could be watching and not taking him seriously, but watch closer. Just view more closely what you're being presented. That kid
he's
has
absolutely
teeth.
Conniving, absolutely vicious. The shark has an extra row of teeth when you look at this kid. You know
it. Right. They're all angled back, too. And you kind of forget about the 70% mark of the season. Once he's gotten the nightclub and he's kind of failing at being a nightclub manager, that's when you kind of start to wonder, like, all right, are they going to show some humanity? Because they put it perfectly in that first episode. There's a fair amount of Batman's rogues gallery that, fittingly enough, have no superpowers.
Sure,
they're just dudes with problems, and they've manifested in certain ways. And Penguin is no different. He's just a strange dude that kind of has a lot of quirks. And if you had to pick a power, for Batman, it might be deductive reasoning or something. If you just had to pick a couple words to describe what he's capable of. But for Penguin, it's just he's a master tradesman. That is what it gets down to. The man knows what everything is worth for every other person. So the least believable moment in the entire show, and strangely enough, one of the more fun ones is when he's getting used to Butch being, his guy, and he's starting to get the thing, and he's starting to get the club going, and he's lacking liquor. And Butch kind of solves the problem for him, and Penguin couldn't. I wondered where we were going for a second. But the bottom line ended up being that this version of the Penguin always has a very clear view of the higher picture.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the fine points he's still figuring out. But
the
big picture he's got... He's got all of it, and they nail it in the first freaking episode. They nail it immediately. Isn't it the first episode, or is it the second? But I want to say it's the first one where he gets executed, or pseudo executed by Gordon.
Yeah.
But
that was first.
I can see things. All that. There will be blood in the streets. Mm-hmm. All that. This is just a guy who gets it. He understands the criminal underworld in a way that other people never will.
Yeah, and he's. The only reason I buy that Jim Gordon keeps getting put in a position where he keeps having to ask Penguin for favors,
right.
The only reason I buy it is because I believe that Penguin knew it was going to happen and made it happen. Otherwise, Jim Gordon's got a couple of really big flaws that is really hard to get over.
That just
I'm like, dude,
happens
you,
into that
you
situation.
You know without a shadow of a doubt. That
this
you are going to regret
to
this.
With.
You cannot keep trusting Penguin. Stop asking him for favors.
Well, they do a thing, though, where I think it's Bullock that calls him on the, you can't go to him again. And he does anyway, and it's going to backfire. It's going to backfire.
They hung the lantern. It just didn't shine.
Early season two will involve a series of IOUs being pulled by the Penguin. Firmly believe it.
Well, he's King of Gotham, right? We got that whole Titanic scene at the end.
He really did pull.
Which I don't know how he climbed up on that roof like that because, he had just gotten shot in the leg. But whatever.
I don't care if that's your non-injured leg even. You've got one limpy gimpy thing that you just barely have control over. Obviously, barely have control over. And then their leg's been shot. Adrenaline being
which
is
a little surprising. It's a little surprising that it's such a big deal for him to be king of Gotham anyway. All it was like 15 dudes with guns for a second, like
right,
shooting at each other, and he's king of Gotham now. I understand TV budgets.
No. I'm happy to explain that as like you have a board of directors meeting somewhere, for instance, at Wayne Enterprises, and you know, there's mm-hmm. 15 people around that table.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine all those people with guns and redefine the scene, and we're kind of back there. I imagine this is like
agree to disagree,
upper
sir.
Middle management that was there with with an AR-15 that day.
Right.
I am less amused by the fact that the Penguin just wanders in with a gun and freaking sprays and prays, and everyone just bolts. Just bolt.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
was strange.
By the way, some of the worst aims. Like, how do you become? How do
spray
you become
pray,
like a top level henchman? How do you become a top level henchman for any number of dons that might be out there looking to employ a man such as yourself? If you can't aim a freaking gun,
I know. But if you can predict just, human behavior you know, on the level that man apparently can, you keep him anyway.
If you can predict human behavior on the level that the Penguin does, you don't spray and pray.
Well, that's what I keep hoping. I've rewatched the scene a couple times, hoping that his plan was to spray the room. No, he just seems to come in there with some sort of adolescent rage and just pull a trigger and then run out of bullets and run. It seems very undirected. There was a portion, like the action portions of that finale were just suspect, I want to say, at best. There were, it seemed slightly undirected. It seemed like it was directed more by the writer than the characters. And yeah, that's the worst I can give it. And short of that, here's what I give it. Like I can nitpick about some of the crap about the characters and everything. But it, bottom line was it set it up though, where Penguin's top of his game. Riddler's going freaking mm-hmm. crazy. Selina is, and this is, by the way, I know her character choice in that last episode is strange, but Bruno Heller mm-hmm. himself described
oh,
it as, I'm going to quote here, teenagers try on different roles. I can actually kind of get behind that. I mean,
you know what I have to say to that?
What?
We ain't kids and it ain't morning.
I mean, I get that. But at the same time, you're like, she's a 15-year-old girlish. I mean, come on, give or take a year, but that's a 15-year-old girl. And a 15-year-old anything is kind of impressionable. And
sure,
you try on different roles. You do. Like you when
you
you're
do.
A late teenager, early teenager, you go through phases, and there's all kinds of tropes for that crap.
I will note that she was one of the ones who didn't shave the side of her head. She didn't bedazzle her brain there.
Points. Points for that. Points for that alone.
Because 15-year-old girls are like, I'm not
she,
doing that.
She
That's
changed
hair.
Her hairstyle, but it looked like it was more like a few bobby pins yeah. than, you know,
yeah,
shaving and piercing her skull. And, yeah. Okay.
Freaking Fish Mooney walking out looking like Callisto from the X-Men Morlocks, you know?
She did. It was just strange.
It was. All right, but, no, we can't get through this retrospective without talking about Cameron Monaghan.
Okay, yeah, no,
who if he is not the Joker, is at least a precursor to the Joker.
Now we've gone on for a while, so we're just gonna have to call it at the thing you should call it at. Let's end this show with the Joker.
Sure.
I mean, there are a lot of all right. Let me put it this way, just to start from scratch. Bruno Heller has described it in a number of ways. All of those ways are the biggest tease I think I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, specifically at least for this show, but in particular, he has given us nothing. He has given us nothing but empty promises and double wording. And okay, all we know is that kid is related to the Joker. And in other interviews,
he has the DNA of the Joker inside
of him. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we know he's got the DNA of the Joker inside of him, that he's connected to the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
And then we run out of things that we can usefully apply.
Right.
Then it just becomes a big old pile of what the hell.
Now, this kid was and continues to be a real area of contention amongst the fans and the detractors of the show about, you know, half of those people who love the performance. They can't agree on whether or not he was doing a Ledger impersonation, or if he was doing a Jack Nicholson impersonation. The detractors have the same qualm, except they think it's a bad impersonation. The fact that the detractors are split on whether or not he was doing a Ledger or a Nicholson, by his very virtue, proves that he did a fantastic job.
Absolutely.
If you cannot pin down, what the hell that kid is doing
with such an iconic set of roles.
I mean, this kid was mixing and matching, and it kind of did become his own. It became his own thing. It wasn't quite Nicholson. It wasn't quite Ledger. There were even hints at Hamill there.
One of my favorite parts. The laugh was kind of Hamill.
Yeah.
It looked like it was very Nicholson, and he muttered. He would kind of jumble his words with that Ledgerish kind of aspect. Caesar was about the only person who didn't pull into that thing.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't know if this kid is the Joker. I doubt Heller knows if this kid is the Joker.
Well, he described it.
I'm curious to find out, though.
Quoting two words here, long play. This kid is part of the long play of who the Joker is. He hasn't said that that's not the Joker. He hasn't said that it is. At the end of one of his things, he just says that's Teaser enough, I think. Like, he's just messing with us, man. I mean, that kid could very easily be the Joker, and you could be at the very least. I mean, I know there's Napier, but you're gonna have more screen time with the first version of naming and originating the Joker. You're gonna be able to set that bar yourself. I mean, Nicholson only had a portion of 2 hours. You can reset everything. And time has told. If you do it well enough, it'll end up back in the books.
Well, overall, I think it was a sound season, if not in a tumultuous schlock fest of dark and gritty mixed with Schumacher-esque cartoonism.
No, I will not accept that description. At no point,
I will.
Did anyone pull out a Gotham credit card or some shit.
But look at those over the top dance scenes, like the big balls and whatnot. Look at Penguin's hair. Let's really compare the Schumacher Batman with Gotham for just a second. You're looking at the hair. You're looking at everything. Pretty much everything Fish Mooney did was straight Uma Thurman.
Okay. Uma Thurman and Jada Pinkett Smith. I can call that one for one.
Mm-hmm.
And I can easily find an analog for Penguin's hair.
And Penguin's hair is straight up Jim Carrey's hair as the Riddler. I mean, it's that gaudy and that stupid. And to be fair, Schumacher, had he not had the disruptions from the studio that he did, he would have made a much darker movie. You look at the number 23, for God's sake. That is pure Gotham. People scooping eyeballs out, blood, gore, weird, but all ensconced in neon and just weird shit.
Right.
I'm just saying this could very well be, Schumacher's true version of Batman, sans nipple suits.
And I can't stress this enough. I don't know a situation on Earth, in any version of Earth, that shouldn't exclude the words sans nipple suit. No version of a nipple suit should exist.
I'll put it this way. If season two starts off with gangsters with machine guns that have neon lights, we might not be talking about this show again on the podcast.
I mean, look, I'll make you a deal right now.
Uh-huh.
They're going to introduce Mr. Freeze. If any of Mr. Freeze's subordinates attack someone with a hockey stick, I will seriously consider burning all of my DC memorabilia.
That's a bold statement.
If they're not aware that was one of the worst portions of that entire Schumacher abomination, it would have to be an extremely clever version of attacking someone with a hockey stick.
You know what? I take back what I said. If that's where they're going with this show, I'm going to sink with the ship, man.
You're going with it?
I weathered the storm of Batman and Robin. I can weather this storm as well. All right, that's going to do it for us this week. We are DC On Screen, and you can find us on iTunes and Stitcher. If you can pick up what we're putting down, please go give us a 5-star rating on iTunes or a thumbs up over on Stitcher. It really does help. And if you're saying, hey, wait, I'd like to hear a podcast about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, well, go take a listen to our friends Matt Carroll and Jeff Randall at the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast, also available on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm David C. Robertson, and you can check out my original sketch comedy and web series by searching David C. Robertson on YouTube or on maladjusted.tv. Next week, we're digging deep into the dark underbelly of Starling City in our Arrow Seasons 1 and 2 recap. Hope to see you there.